It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Go big or go home.
Welcome back to the Nats Insider Podcast. Dan Kolko with you. The 2022 season is underway, and the Nationals have wrapped up their series with the Mets. They are off to Atlanta to start a series against the reigning World Series champion Atlanta Braves. Fun being back at the ballpark over the last few days. Weather, well, the Mother Nature, as always, going to put her little stamp on things. But great being back at the yard, kicking off the 2022 campaign. Opening day was so much fun. And the first, you know, fully open in terms of capacity opening day that we've had since 2019. So it was great seeing so many fans in the yard and having all the opening day festivities. And now we go. All the pomp and circumstances behind us, and now it's time to get into the flow of 2022. We've got a good podcast for you this week here on the Nats Insider Podcast. Be joined by Nelson Cruz, the Nationals' big free agent acquisition. He'll be your exclusive podcast interview this week. Also, play my interview with Patrick Corbin after his opening day start. Pitched pretty well, coming off a disappointing 2021 campaign for him. So play my interview with the Nationals opening day starter. And we'll play my interview with Dijon Watson, who is now in charge of Nationals player development. Former special assistant to general manager Mike Rizzo, moving into a new role this year, tasked with running the Nationals minor leagues, essentially. So good long conversation with Dijon about all the young talent the Nationals have in their farm system, how he is going to try and put his stamp on player development in this organization. So stick around for that. But first, let's get to my interview with Nelson Cruz. This is a guy that has won a Roberto Clemente Award, is known as a fantastic teammate in addition to being a fantastic ball player. And oh, by the way, he's hit a bunch of home runs in his career as well. It's going to provide some serious support for Juan Soto, some protection for him in the lineup. Davey putting him in there in the number three spot, at least to begin the season, behind Juan and ahead of Josh Bell. And it's been fun getting to know Nelson Cruz a little bit over the last couple weeks. Let's play now my interview with the Nationals' DH, their big free agent acquisition, Nelson Cruz. Nelson, welcome to the ball club. It's great to have you here. Take me through this offseason and how the process played out that landed you here as a member of the Washington Nationals.
First of all, thank you for having me on. It was like any other, I guess, all season as a free agent. You waited for calls. Soto played a big role. He called me really early on. I guess he found out that the Nationals wanted me. Johnny called me.
Johnny DePuglia?
Yeah, Everything started from there.
What's the excitement level for you to get to play with Juan? He's, you know, a Dominican guy like you, and you've gotten to watch him develop over the last few years from afar. Now you get to see him every day. You were just out hitting with him. What's the excitement level to be so close to a guy like that now?
Well, it's really impressive. I mean, saw him through the years. Just the way he's mature at the plate, you know, the way he take care of himself. Definitely, it seems like he understands the process and what it takes and what is baseball about, the fans. In general, he's a true professional. And I had a chance to see him close eyes, just working out, the way he prepares himself for every game, even for the trainings and batting practice, you know. Everything is go through a bunch of details just to get where he is right now. And it makes me really proud because, I'm a big fan of him.
Why does it make you proud?
Because I guess when I saw young players from Dominican coming up, you know, I always cheer for them, you know, and I want to see them doing good. So you can mention different cases like Vladdy and Tatis, Devers, Franco, a bunch of players that I had the chance to see them coming up through the minors and see them playing in the Dominican Winter Ball, and now they are MLB stars. Hmm.
Baseball is so much part of the life in the Dominican, it seems like. It's part of the culture.
Yep.
How did baseball impact you as a child, even before you got to a point that you were signing and you were becoming a professional? What type of impact did baseball have on your life as a kid?
Growing up, we played baseball everywhere. In the street, in the farms, at school. Everywhere we can find a place to throw a baseball and hit baseballs, we play. So growing up, I saw my friends, all the friends, my dad playing softball, playing baseball, cousins, and it's hard for us to don't get in love with baseball because we had baseball 24/7 all year round. And because of baseball, I mean, I have a better life. I've been impacting a lot of people. I don't necessarily have to be close family, but in general, in Dominican, and I mean, everywhere I go, I try to make sure I do my part so I give back what baseball gave me.
Yeah, you have been an active humanitarian. Why has that been something that's been so important to you and has become kind of hand in hand with your playing on the field is the impact that you want to make on the off the field? Why is that something that has been such a focus for you?
Yeah, growing up, I was in my dad in bowling and all community activities. He was created a basketball. He was the leader of the community. All the details that we tried to figure out to make the community better, my dad was always involved on. And I always say, if you're not a good baseball player, I can also be a good one in the community and try to give back. So I understand this is an important part of me as a baseball player. Make sure I give back and I take care of the other people and try to get that message to the young players too.
Now let's talk about you on the field as a baseball player. Nationals fans have seen you in the American League for a number of years. Now you're coming over to the National League and you're coming over to this organization. So if fans haven't seen you that up close or watched that many of your ABs, describe for them what type of hitter you are, how you go about your business, and what your game plan is up there. Because even for power hitters, you want to hit the ball out of the ballpark, you want to make loud contact, but everybody goes about it different ways. So how would you explain the way that you attack your hitting to Nats fans?
Well, it's simple. I just try to hit the ball hard, you know. I make sure I get the sweet spot at the bat to the baseball, and whatever happened after that, you know, it just happened. I like to hit or think about hitting line drives. If it goes a different way, it goes, but that's my thought process, try to hit the other way, work on the count. So I guess you can be a better hitter like that.
Now, you made a lot of people happy when you said that one of the keys to you sustaining all this success over your years has been taking a lot of naps. I'm with you on that. Maybe beyond the napping, how have you been able to, especially in today's baseball, where veteran players, the viejos, as they've called them here with the Nationals for a number of years, have been kind of faded out of the game. How have you been able to stick around?
It's simple. I mean, if you don't produce, you're going to come out of the game, you know. But thank God I find the way to understand my body with my routines, working out, the way I eat, the way I think about the game. I mean, so many things involve who I am right now as a player, but it takes a lot of time. For me, I come up kind of late to the lead, so it was a big process, and now I kind of know exactly where I want to go, all the things that make me better, where to push, when to stop, and it goes different year by year, and I try to get better years to come.
So you've accomplished a lot in your career. You've hit a lot of balls at a ballparks. You've made all-star teams. You've done a lot of things. What do you still want to accomplish?
We're serious. That's the optimal goal. Hopefully this is the year we can repeat as a championship. And I guess after that, my goal as a professional player, it can be complete.
So that's the last box you want to check? Get that ring on your finger?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we hope to see it this year. We're so excited to have you on board, Nelson.
Thank you
so much for taking the time and looking forward to a lot of good things this year.
Thank you. See you at the ballpark.
We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us on the Nats Insider Podcast. Welcome back. Patrick Corbin made his first opening day start as a National on Thursday of last week. Pitched pretty well. Didn't end up going as deep into the game as he would like. Final line for Patrick, 4-plus innings, allowed 5 hits and 2 runs, walked 2, and struck out 4. Put up 4 scoreless frames to start his outing, and then things kind of unraveled a little bit in the 5th, although it wasn't due to hard contact. A bunt base hit by Robinson Cano, a walk in there, a hit by pitch as well. Corbin got chased, and a couple runs added to his line. But overall, a solid building block for Corbin to begin the 2022 season as he hopes to right things after a disappointing 2021. I chatted with Corbin the day after his opening day start in the Nationals clubhouse. Here he is.
Opening day start looked really good through the first 4 innings. What do you make of the outing overall?
I felt really good yesterday, and I just try to continue to improve, learn from some things. But yeah, overall, I'm pretty pleased with it and just looking forward to continue to build off that and go from there.
What was the biggest thing that worked for you yesterday that you do want to build on?
I thought fastball command was really good yesterday. I think just trying to get a little better feel for my slider. I thought we did throw some good ones there. But like I said, trying to look back at it and see what I do differently, there really isn't much. So just the 5th inning, they get on with a bunt, and then I think walking the guy there was led them to a couple runs there. So just minimizing those walks and pitching to contact.
Are you a guy that searches for mechanical fixes when maybe you're trying to get back on track, or how do you kind of broadly go about the process of trying to find something that you used to have?
Yeah, I've never been like a huge mechanical look at videos. I feel for me personally, you think about that a little too much when you're out there. It's more of a feel when I go out there, and I know a big thing was my arm slot, so just trying to figure out a way to get that closer to where it's been. But I thought yesterday being able to stay on the corners, my slider to play off that is kind of what I was focusing on. And I thought we did a good job at that. And I feel if I can continue to do that, things will shape out to be good for me.
When you are trying to get an arm slot in a different spot, is that kind of a muscle memory thing that's just a matter of reinforcing it by long tossing and bullpen sessions and breaking it down that? Like, how do you go about trying to lock in something that can be so fine, you know, raising your arm angle or lowering it just a tad, but it makes a big difference?
I think once you've it's a feel thing. When you go out there, you just repeat. When you play catch, things like that, for me is a big thing with my rib cage, just kind of keeping it down, and that's just like my thought. But when I'm able to do that, it keeps my arm slot where I need it to be. But I think everyone's different. Some people like video looking at it. Personally, that's not what I try to do, but just really focus on the glove, keeping my head still, and just you can just tell by where your fastball command's going. If you're consistently hitting the glove where you want it, usually everything's lined up.
You started an opening day before when you were with Arizona. This was your first one here in DC. Did it feel any different than a normal start? Did it, were the butterflies any higher or anything like that?
I was really excited, ready to go, and then we get the delay. So then you're trying to sit in here and stay warm and stay loose. But I think any opening day, you're just really excited to be out there, whether you're playing or even getting your name called to go walk out there before the national anthem. So it's always a special day. It's exciting to get the season kicked off, and always an honor if you do get the ball.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you.
Patrick Corbin, hoping to build off of that opening day start and keep things rolling. Fastball command, as he said, was good last time out. Everything goes off of that. We'll look for more of that the rest of the season. We'll take a quick break. Stay with us on the Nats Insider Podcast. Welcome back. Deshaun Watson, a longtime front office executive across variety of Major League Baseball organizations, has been with the Nationals for the last handful of years, serving as a special assistant to General Manager Mike Rizzo, now moving into a new role. He's going to run the Nationals farm system, director of player development, and he's a fun guy to be around, a lot of energy, and has a passion for developing young talent. This is a role that I think suits him very well. He's very fired up for this position. And I had a chance during spring training to talk with Dijon about what he hopes to do organizationally, some talent that he sees making its way up to the Nationals big league club in the near future, and some names to keep your eyes on for the future. Some maybe less heralded names that Dijon Watson thinks could be players at the major league level down the road. Here he is now, the Nationals Director of Player Development, Dijon Watson.
Dijon, great to catch up with you again, and thanks for taking time with me, buddy, to join us here on the podcast. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to doing this.
Yeah, my pleasure. I was very excited back in, what was it, November or so, when news came across that you were moving from your previous role as a special assistant to Riz, to the general manager, into your new role now as director of player development. So congratulations on that. That's an exciting thing for you. You've got kind of a wide array of skill sets based on your past experiences in baseball. And I'm curious why moving into this role was the right fit for you. Why did you want to get back specifically on the minor league side and work on developing this next wave of talent that we're going to see up here in DC?
You know, that's a great question. Mike and I, we kind of discussed kind of where the organization was. And I know he had went out and was searching for, you know, someone to fill this role. I felt like, again, I'm here to help because I've done so many different things in the game, been a scouting director, been a farm director, been an AGM, been a VP of baseball operations, signed players internationally, worked in Asia, you know, done the whole Asian operations as far as signing players there. But I think the most rewarding position that I've held in professional baseball has been in player development. So for me, it seemed like a natural fit and for me, an opportunity to try and get back to some of the kids in the game that are trying to, you know, achieve their goals and play at the highest level and help grow and shape some of these young men that we have in the organization. So for me at the time, I felt like it was a great opportunity to really kind of come back and try and contribute to what we're building here, which I'm really excited about.
Now, you and I spent some time together at the Instructional League back in October of last year, and I saw you around these kids, a lot of whom are, 17, 18, 19 years old, and you're in the cage with them. You're giving them little pointers here and there. You're watching them on the backfields, and I could tell the fire and the drive that you had in working with these guys who you can really mold. You know, you're around big leaguers, and they're not a finished product. No ball player is ever a finished product. But they largely are who they are. Mm-hmm. But it seemed to me like you really get a passion from being able to take the unfinished product and impart some wisdom and kind of steer them in the right direction that can really help their career in a big way.
You know, it was just, again, and during Instruction League, I was just there really trying to watch and evaluate the players that we had acquired in the draft. And I'd seen some of them during the season. So it was like kind of like a reunion of players. And so we kind of established a little rapport with one another. So I was able to kind of get into them a little bit and loosen them up and just have some really good dialogue, ask some great questions. And they had great answers as well. So it gave me, again, that slight little room to kind of get in and get a little deeper to find out how they were wired. But again, I think Mark and Doug Harris had done a tremendous job here with player development. Our staff that was down there working with those guys, they did the work. I was just on the outside, you know, just really trying to keep my hands off, but yet picking at them a little bit to trying to again, stimulate thought, make them think a little differently, and again, oppose some challenges to them in the upcoming games that they were playing, to get them to understand how important it is when we're playing teams within our division that we want to win those games. Even in Instruction League, we want to start establishing that winning culture, that winning mindset. And it starts, you know, even as early as our early work in the cage and what we're doing with our drills, early work again with some of our infield coordinators and instructors, our base running, just some of the finer details of the game, they're really important because those are the separators that will keep you from winning a championship when ultimately that's our goal, is to win championships. So I just tried to plant a few seeds there while I was during Instructional League with some of those young players, and I had a great time with them.
Dijon Watson, the Nationals' new Director of Player Development, is here with me on the Nats Insider Podcast. And Dijon, beyond infusing that culture of winning and establishing that at the very low levels up all the way through, you know, AA, AAA, the big leagues. Mm-hmm. How do you view your philosophies now that you have your hands on the reins of this minor league system? What are the broader points that you want to bring to your coaches and instructors and funnel down the line? And where specifically do you think this organization can improve in those areas?
You know, I think that's a pretty interesting question, because there are a lot of different areas that we touch on with everyone within the organization, from the coaches as well as the players. I think the most important thing for us on the development side of these kids is understanding the culture in which we're trying to teach and grow here internally, about how we're going to attack our at-bats, about how we're going to attack the strike zone as pitchers. Those are the areas in which we really want to hammer down and make sure they really understand what we're trying to do and establish the Nationals way. And again, that winning mindset, that winning culture about how we're going to attack the game on a daily basis in our relentless pursuit of excellence. You know, that's what we're pushing for here every single day, not only on our player side, but also on the coaching side. I think we've had the ability, ownership and Mike have given me some wiggle room to add some different pieces to how we're raising these players and developing them, and utilizing the tools that are available to us now that weren't there when I was in this position 15 years ago, 10 years ago, right? So now it's really fun to really start digging deeper into the player to try and get them to be the best possible player that they can be with their current skills and tools. And now we have information that will help guide us there and hopefully get us there a little bit quicker and accelerate that learning curve for these players. And what I'm really having a great time is that our pitching coordinator and our hitting coordinators, they've been having these Zoom calls with our staff. We're really trying to establish that culture, that mindset of how we're going to teach organically, you know, from within, to help get these guys prepared for what's in front of them.
Dijon, you mentioned some of the hires that you guys made. I know that organizationally that was a focus, was broadening out the amount of coordinators, of coaches, of things like nutrition and mental health at the minor league levels. Just take me through what specifically you hoped to accomplish with these hires and how targeted you were in what areas you wanted to address with these openings that you had some, you know, that ownership had given you the ability to make.
I felt like I was pretty focused on a couple of key pieces, especially on the mental skills side. I really wanted to focus on someone that I'd worked with in the past that had some success on building out some really strong minds that I had in Los Angeles, and Dana Sinclair. She's worked with so many, you know, different professional organizations, but the way she works with the players and the information she's able to gather and help us from the development side of how to communicate, how to teach, and how to again, focus our energies towards that player. I thought that was a really big piece for us to add. I was able to add Emily Cately as our nutritionist, which is a really new position for us. And we had Sue at the major league level this past year, but having someone on the minor league side to take some of that unnecessary stress off of our strength and conditioning coaches at the minor league level. She comes in and she'll be able to really start really gauging what is important for our players and what they need to nourish their body so that they can go out and perform, as well as get the proper rest that they need and staying hydrated and doing all those fundamental pieces that we need, again, to get the most out of the player. We were able to touch base on Sam Nehring, who's our pitching coordinator. Tremendous upside, great knowledge and feel for the delivery, as well as the, you know, utilizing the tools that are available to us now on the analytics side and bring that to our overall development process. We incorporated Michael Tejera, who's going to blend with him as a lower level pitching coordinator, to kind of take this into Latin America for us. So again, we're laying that foundation at the entry level, and it carries us all the way through to the big leagues. On the hitting side, we were fortunate enough to get Joe Dillon back into the fold, which I'm really excited about. Great mind, tremendous teacher, and is really thorough and talks a lot about the mindset and again, establishing that culture of how we're going to build our offensive machine and how we're going to build passing that baton on to the next man in line and growing our offensive approach and to again maximize our ability to score runs. I was fortunate enough to go get Jose Aguacil to be our infield coordinator. This guy has at least 6 gold gloves over when he's with the Giants with their infielders there, so I know he knows what he's doing and teaching there. Again, we had good teachers here before, but this was just one of those special personalities that I felt like had a great ability to reach back and teach everyone at every level with advanced information to kind of, again, accelerate that growth for these players as we move them towards their big leagues. You know, picking up a guy like Dave Jouse, who's been around the game for so long, is such a great teacher, helping us grow our young managers. We have some young managers now in the organization. couple of guys getting their first. Louis Ordaz will be his first time managing. He's going to be at the camp league level for us. You know, we're going to have Jake Lowry at Fredericksburg, and then we're going to have Mario Lison, who's an up-and-comer, helping these guys really understand what it takes to lead young men, to grow a staff, to grow a team, to understand the forming, the norming, and then the storming portion of the development process throughout the year. It's so important to have that guy that they can bounce some things off of. Spen, who's been here a long time, will help Sam in his transition. I got lucky enough to snag a Rafael Chavez. You can tell how excited I am about this group of guys that I've added here, man. I get so excited. Sure. To start talking fast, but we have a good group. Billy Miller, who's going to be my quality assurance guy, and quality making sure that we're matching what they're doing at the big league level in AAA and AA, so that when our guys are going up and down, there is no blind spot. We don't know what's going on. Everyone is on the same page. And so we've put together some really good people. We have some good processes in place. I was fortunate enough to grab David Longley from the San Diego Padres and bring him on to help our research and technologies piece. He's been working hand in hand with Joe Dillon, as well as Sammy, on building out some interfacing information for our players and our staff. I'm really trying to again, grow our internal staff members to keep them current with the technology so that they're never out of pocket with what's going on and what's being said. So the vernacular has changed so much over the last few years. We're trying to make sure we're staying with it, and it's as well as advancing in front of it. And we're, you know, currently I'm in search of another piece to add to this puzzle on the biomechanics side. And so we're growing this department. We're growing our overall organization and how we're putting it together. It just takes a little time, but we're not going to try and kill it all in one final swoop. It's a gradual process, right? And as we're, you know, again, bringing this out and rolling it out to our players and our staff, it can't just, you know, you can't just pour everything on top. It's a slow process as we get there. I'm trying to take small bites out of this thing to make sure it's lasting and it has some legs to stand on once we get it implemented.
Dijon Watson, the Nationals' new director of player development, is here with me on the Nats Insider Podcast. And Dijon, I want to ask you about something that is the hot topic throughout baseball over the last couple of years, and it's the implementation of some of the statistical pieces of the process, I guess you could say. The analytics, the high spin rate cameras, the slow motion, the Rapsodos, all those pieces that can fit in with the scouting that Mike Rizzo and his staff have done so well over decades now. How do you see those two components blending together, and how much of the kind of more advanced statistical technological components do you want to have your minor league coaches and your minor league players focused on?
Again, we're going to have all of those materials, and we have all the tools here. They've been here. What we're doing now is we're rolling them out and utilizing them a little bit more with our side sessions. Even when we get to this early camp, we're going to have like a lab that'll be built out into our certain area of our cages. We'll be working with our pitchers as well as our hitters. So the information and technology, I mean, the game is advancing and evolving. And so if you have these tools available to you, why would you not use them? And so we're trying to really take the pieces that are important for us, that we feel like are important to our development process, and apply those into what we're doing as far as our daily, you know, player plans that we're building out for them. So again, like I mentioned earlier, tightening up the development window to hopefully get them to become the best players that they can possibly be at a little more rapid pace. There's just so many different tools that we're able to use now, whether it be the K-Vest or whether it be, you know, Rapsodo TrackMan. Hawkeye is going to be the new thing that's coming into not only minor league baseball, but definitely major league baseball. So we're able to start breaking down some of the biomechanics and where the body is in the delivery, where the body is in the swing. So we're looking at all of those different things. And again, that's why I talked about looking for a biomechanist right now to try and get them involved in our process. Those are just pieces that we're trying to, again, continue to grow, not only just the player development side and tying it in with our scouting, but make them blend seamlessly with the information so that no one is feeling overwhelmed with the information that's being displayed to them or talked about. Again, the vernacular has changed so much over the last 10 years of the game, and it's about keeping everyone current with the information that's being shared amongst yourselves more than anything.
Dijon, let's talk now about a couple of the high-level prospects that are within the organization that have Nationals fans so excited. Okay. We got to start with Cade Cavalli, and I want to get your thoughts on Brady House as well. One has been in the system. He was first-round pick, 2020? So he's been around for a little bit, had to deal with the COVID season, and then last year had a full year making his way all the way up to AAA, which was a heck of a jump. And then Brady House is brand new to the system, and got some time at the Complex League, and we got to see him up close in the Instructional League as well. Give me your thoughts on those two prospects and what they can become.
Well, Cade Cavalli, man, what an exciting, good-looking young prospect. Four-pitch mix. He's strong. He's physical. He hasn't been pitching very long. He was a shortstop and converted over to pitcher, but he's featuring a double-plus fastball. He's 96 to 99 with some ride and occasional cut. He's got added a two-seamer to his mix with some late downer sink to it that can induce ground balls. His curveball is a power three-quarter breaker that has good shape, and he's starting to utilize his changeup a little bit more. So I think the biggest thing for him in that rapid rise to AAA is really understanding how to manage his mix. When he's had, there are going to be days he's going to feel great, where he's going to go out there with electric stuff, and there are going to be days where he's not going to feel as good as he wants to feel, but you still have to go out and execute and give your team a chance to win. So I think it's really, for me, it's about developing his mindset and helping him understand where he is in his overall growth and what he's facing, and understanding the information he's gaining on the swings, the locations, how they're responding to the pitches that he's throwing, and again, managing the game and understanding his game plan and what fits him best. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him continue to evolve and grow. We had him down at the early, the January camp, and man, he looked good physically. The ball was coming out of his hand hot. And he just seemed like he was in a really good space and looking forward to coming to camp and really trying to compete to help our big league club here in the near future. So I'm excited for him. And on Brady House, man, he went home and had a really good winter, came back strong. His body's in great shape. He looked great at our early camp. He's 6'4", about 205 pounds. Surprisingly a good runner. He ran a 4.3, 4.35 down the line. So the biggest thing for me on Brady is really just kind of cleaning up the hands and the feet at shortstop. He's a big man, so understanding, he has to understand how his body needs to work in small spaces, being that large, and how quickly he needs to make adjustments and transition his feet, and it's from filling the baseball and getting to his throwing position. So those are things that Jose Aguacil has already been on the phone with him talking about, to hopefully work with him on some of his drill packages during the offseason before he reports on February the 21st. But looking forward to seeing this young man do his thing. He was swinging the bat exceptionally well down there, driving the baseball from gap to gap. I think the power is going to play solid average to above average. He's a chance to be a really exciting player down the road, man. He's going to be fun to watch.
Dijon Watson, the Nationals Director of Player Development, joining me on the Nats Insider podcast. Dijon, I want to ask you about another name that Nats fans up here in D.C. might not be too familiar with yet, but has been in the organization for a couple of years and was internationally a big get a few years back, and that's Yasiel Antuna. Mm-hmm. You guys made the move to take him from the infield and move him to left field. Mm-hmm. What was the impetus for that? And what do you think that could do to potentially just allow him to maybe focus on his hitting a little bit more, or to clear some of the frustration that was coming from some of the errors that he was making on the infield? Just take me through that whole transition and how you think that can benefit a kid that you guys are still high on.
Okay, I wasn't there for that transition of the move from him from short to the outfield, but I understand why they moved him from shortstop to the outfield, because there is a lot of pressure to play that, especially in a premium position when in the middle of the diamond. There's so many plays going on. There's so much movement going on, and it can't take away from you offensively if it's not, you know, again, a natural position for you. I think moving him to the outfield, seeing him in left field during the instructional league, his first step quickness was still there. His routes were solid. There's definitely room for improvement there, but his arm is above average with good carry. And again, he's had some hamstring issues in the past, so this may free up some of the stress on the legs. Being in the outfield, it's a different wear and tear on your body than playing a premium position like shortstop or even center field for that matter. I think the tools are there. The offensive approach, I saw him really early in the season. I want to say early June, then I saw him late in July, and it was like seeing two completely different guys. By the time I saw him late in the season, he was really controlling the strike zone from both sides of the plate. It was a line drive gap stroke with good strength with backspin into the gap for extra bases. I think what happened in the last month of the season, he just ran out of gas. It was his first full season. So I think fatigue kind of set in, and it kind of took away from his at bats to a certain degree. But if you could take away portions of the season and just look at mid-June to the end of July, man, he put together a really good stretch there. So for me, I think with this move to the outfield, it will definitely free up his mind, give him an opportunity to really focus on his offensive approach. I can see him, you know, growing into a middle of the order run producing bat, that slot somewhere in that four, then at 5-6 in your lineup, and just be a steady, competitor, because he really loves to compete. I just like his mindset, and he's such a good young man. I just think he's going to be fine. And again, this move, I think it's going to benefit him and accelerate his growth to where he needs to be. He didn't finish up at the highest number offensively for us, but there's things that I think we're actually trending in the right direction to get him where I think he will be by the end of 2022.
Deshaun Watson, the Nationals Director of Player Development, moving into that role this year, joins me on Nats Insider. And Deshaun, I'll let you get out of here with this one. There's a lot of focus always across the baseball landscape on the top prospects in every organization, the top 100 across Major League Ball. But that's not necessarily how organizations win long-term. They win with stars, but they win with depth as well. And I know that there are some depth pieces that you guys really like. You were out at the Arizona Fall League. You got to see Jackson Clough. You got to see Cole Henry. You got to see some of these other guys. Give Nationals fans a glimpse at some of, you know, the guys that aren't the 1-2 prospects, but who you're high on and who you think could develop into some nice players up here at the major league level.
Definitely, man. I think we have quite a few, to be honest with you. And so for me, I'm just like, just be patient with us because they're coming first and foremost. But we do have some good looking young arms coming. Cole Henry is going to be one of those guys who may sit in the middle of a rotation someday down the road. You have to remember Jackson Rutledge is another big arm guy who's really starting to understand how to utilize his mix. And he's 94 to 98 with a power breaking ball, power slider, power curveball. And so again, once we get him to master his craft, he's got a chance to either, you can put him either in the rotation or in the back end of your bullpen. This guy has a chance to be really dynamic for your club. This past draft, there was a kid by the name of Dustin Sains, left-hander, 93, 95. I mean, it's a beautiful arm swing and arm slot. His curveball is average to above, and he has solid average to above changeup. So he's another guy I think will fly through and be knocking on the door relatively quick. So I'm excited about him and where he is in his development. There's my sleeper here is Jackson Tetrault, right-hander, former tennis player. Good long, lean body. He has three pitches up to 97. But again, he's a tennis player, just really refocusing his energy towards baseball, looking forward to his development, seeing what he does this year. But he's another one who has some upside for me that may appear at the big leagues and hopefully in the near future, if we can get some of the smaller pieces ironed out. When you start looking at our catching from an organizational standpoint, our catching depth has improved immensely in 1 year's time. Just over the trade deadline, we acquired Drew Melas, who to go along with Israel Pineda. Both of those guys have big league skills and tools and have a chance to play there. I'm just really excited about those young men. Looking at our middle infield, we've already talked about Brady House, but we acquired another young man by the name of Yordi Barley, shortstop from the Dominican Republic, athletic, live, wiry body. He led our organization to stolen bases. His tools are incredible. So again, for us, if we can harness that swing and get him to stay in that right center field gap and let the rest of the stuff play for him, he's going to be a fun one to watch as he comes through. We had another kid, Ricardo Mendoza, an outfielder from Venezuela, who reminds me of a young Gregor Blanco, man. He had a tremendous year, went from low A ball to high A ball, was driving the ball in both gaps, running well. There's just some tremendous upside there. We didn't even talk about Dylan Lyle, who's our second round pick, and I didn't even talk about TJ White, who's a big switch hitter with some power. So I asked the Nats fan to be patient with us as we transition, but these young kids are coming. They're going to be fun to watch as we move forward here.
Deshaun Watson, the Nationals' new Director of Player Development. Deshaun, great getting a chance to catch up with you, man. I'm really excited and happy for you with this move over to the player development side. Can't wait to see all the positive things that you implement there with the young kids and all the progress that's made. So excited for you. Thanks for taking time and hope to see you again soon.
Dan, so thank you so much for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
That will do it for the Nats Insider Podcast for this week. Thank you to Deshaun Watson, to Patrick Corbin, and to Nelson Cruz for joining me this week. And thank you to all of you for listening as well. Talk to you guys next Monday. Have a good one.
Go big or go home.